Game on 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
It's Thursday, the 22nd of July. Coming up on Game On tonight, we analyse the Olympic boxing draw with Chris McNulty and see how it affects Irish medal hopes.
By a score of 10 points to 8, and the Olympic champion in the red corner, representing Ireland, Katie Tyler.
Wouldn't it be great to get another day like that? We hear the South African perspective ahead of Saturday's first lines test against the Springboks, with BJ Botha going head-to-head with Shane Byrne.
Conor Murray, just Sexton, just pulled it back a little bit to Bowen. Now it's Jonathan Davis, little delay, onto Halfpenny. Halfpenny going here, inside to Sexton!
We'll also keep you updated on the UEFA Europa Conference League with Bowes and Dundalk both in action this evening.
Ward now on the attack down the left-hand side. Comes in, finds Buckley.
In the Mullins. Have a strike.
The turn. Can he have a shot? Tries to find space.
Oh,
he has a shot. Deflected in.
What a goal.
Jamie Mullins gets the ball into Georgie Kelly.
And Jeff Shepherd casts his eye on American sport.
Off back iron. Gasol and Lillard. Lillard dribbling through the entire Spanish team. Gets it over to Johnson, who jams it home.
Now, if you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So Bohemians have travelled to Luxembourg for their Europa Conference League second qualifying round first leg clash. They are playing Dudelange. That started at 5:30, and Paul Corry is across it for us. Paul, a positive start for Bohs.
Yeah, incredible, Marie. 1-0 up, 35 minutes gone. The goal has come through Ross Tierney. It was actually a really good move as well. It was a ball from Dawson Devoy, somebody who has been spoken about a lot in the last number of weeks. It's a great diagonal ball. He's picked out Ali Koos. Bit of a scuffle with the keeper, and Ross Tierney was there to poke the ball home, but not much between the two sides. Bowes on top, I guess, a little in shading it, and it's really important that they've scored here, and they're really, really within this tie, and they have a great chance of going through.
Yeah, they do. But this team from Luxembourg, look, I know you think of Luxembourg football and you probably don't think they're that great, but at the same time, they have won 14 league titles in the last two decades, completely dominating that football scene in a small country.
Yeah, it's a funny one because I remember UCD playing them back in 2015, and UCD actually knocked them out in away goals. But since 2015, they've had two spells in the Europa League group stages. So when it comes down to, I guess, European pedigree, they've been there or thereabouts in the last number of years. And they even had a draw with Real Betis, and they managed to pick up 4 points in a group involving Sevilla, Applewell and Carabag. So they've picked up results in the last number of years. The word on the street is they've lost a few players and they're not quite as strong as they have been over the last 2 or 3 years. But for Bohs to go there and to be leading 1-0 is still a serious achievement. And they're a team banging formery. They've been doing really well in the league in the last couple of weeks. I always think when you've got somebody like Georgie Kelly, who's confident, who's scoring goals, and you've got the creativity from the likes of Tierney and Dawson Devoy, you're always going to have a chance. And they're full of confidence. They've gone 1-0 ahead. I'm sure they'll build on that confidence, and hopefully, when they get back to the Aviva with 8,000 Bohs fans behind them, hopefully they're still leading or at least out-level with Dudelange, given the good start that they've had this evening.
Yeah, and there's a huge amount of support for them. That game for the next leg sold out after, I think, just a little bit over an hour, 8,000 tickets. Unbelievable. Paul Corry will check back in with you a little bit later. Now we are going to turn our attention to the Olympics and particularly the sport of boxing, because today the draw was made for our boxing team. 3 members, including Kelly Harrington, have received byes in the first round in Tokyo, which is going to begin on Saturday morning. However, several of the team are going to meet some very tough opponents in those early stages. So to talk us through how the draw went, we are joined on the line by journalist Chris McNulty. Chris, let's start with Kelly Harrington, because she is somebody that everybody has been keeping an eye on heading into these games. She's just such a brilliant character, and it feels like this is her moment. Tell us about her draw. She did get a bye.
Yeah, she did get a bye, Marie. So Kelly will fight in a round of 16 against Esmeralda Falcon or Rebecca Nicoli in that round of 16. That'll be next Friday in Tokyo. It's quite a favourable draw, Marie, in that obviously avoiding getting the bye into the round of 16, which means a win next Friday takes her. She's one bout then, one win from a medal at that point. So that's huge. She's also managed to avoid being drawn against the likes of Mira Patkonen, Hamadouche, the IBF super featherweight champion, or Caroline Dubois. So, you know, being the number one seed has obviously been good to Kelly. It's quite a favourable draw, and obviously Kelly is carrying the hopes for us heading to Tokyo in terms of medals. You know, there's nothing guaranteed as such, but you know, it would be a huge shock if Kelly Harrington isn't on the podium.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, huge shocks and boxing and Olympics are things that go hand in hand when it comes to Ireland. Just in terms of her form, how has she been heading into this?
Yeah, look, Kelly's heading to Tokyo in great form. I suppose the Olympics been delayed. Like, she was the 2018 World Gold Medalist, and she was silver medalist as well in Baku at the European Games. But Conan beat her in the final of that. But Conan sort of had a bit of an Indian sign over. But last month in those qualifiers in Paris, Kelly was, you know, superb. Like, she had an absolutely fantastic one over Maeva Hamadouche, the IBF super featherweight champion, who came into those qualifiers with a bit of a name, and you know, a bit of a danger for Kelly, but Kelly came through those superbly and is really, really going to Tokyo with high hopes, not just for a medal, but Kelly Harrington will be going to Tokyo with high hopes for herself of bringing back the gold medal and emulating Katie Taylor.
God, wouldn't it be wonderful? So Belfast featherweight Michaela Walsh and her brother welterweight Aidan have also received byes when they both qualified for the Olympics. I think that's one of those enduring images of the last year, seeing them come together, both heading to the Olympics. Absolutely amazing. But look, good news for both of them with byes.
Yeah, I think you're right, Maria. I think, like, when, you know, the story and we're putting those packages together at the end of the year, like that day where the two Walshes qualified within an hour of each other was just, it's one of those moments, and we saw the backstage footage. Like, obviously, you know, with crowds not being in being in stadiums or in arenas at the moment, it's, you know, those sort of emotional moments aren't maybe what they used to be with, you know, people going to see their families in the crowd and stuff. But that moment where Michaela Walsh, you know, gone into the dressing room and sort of embraces her brother Aidan, and that realisation that both of them are going to Tokyo was brilliant. The draw has been quite kind to both of them. Aidan also has quite a favourable round of 16 draw. So again, like Kelly Harrington, if he wins that, he's 9 minutes from a medal, and he would be boxing in a quarter final. Michaela's got a rather tougher one. Likely, it's an either or scenario. But Irma Testa, who beat her in Minsk a couple of years ago, and also who beat her in Paris, Irma Testa is quite a tough possible opponent for Michaela Walsh. But for me, outside of Kelly Harrington, Michaela Walsh goes, and this was before the draw was made today, Marie. Michaela Walsh would have been sort of my next in line in terms of medal. You know, she's gone consistently to championships. She's gone consistently to big championships and has returned with medals. And Aidan as well, I mean, what a story it would be for him. And he's got a quite a favourable draw again, you know, like, you know, you're going in against judges and going in against all things. But he's got as good a draw possibly as he would have hoped for, because he's in the welterweight division, Marie, which in the male boxing is probably one of the toughest divisions. So he's got, not that, we don't want to jinx him and say, you know, he has got as good a draw as he could have wished for.
Is there any concerns that you're going into fight people who've already came through a fight, you know, that you're a little bit cold heading into this when you have that bye?
Well, I suppose that works a couple of ways. I mean, I just actually had a conversation with Jason Quigley about this a couple of hours ago. And we were, you know, that can also work both ways, where the person who fights is then thinking, God, I'm going in to fight the guy who's been fresh and who's at 110%. So, you know, that's one of those bits of psychology that sort of the winner of the fight will kind of use and say it worked in their favour, but similarly the loser of the fight will point and use the other as a reason. So it depends, really, and it depends on the boxer, and I suppose it really does, you know, use that cliche, it comes down to on the day, like, you know, the person who's fresh can go in and deliver an absolutely unbelievable performance, or the person who wins can take that little bit of extra energy. It's really, it depends on the person, that one.
Yeah, it really does. Okay, so that leaves featherweight Kurt Walker, flyweight Brendan Irvine, light heavyweight Emmett Brennan, and middleweight Aoife O'Rourke, who will have to negotiate the opening stages. Let's start with Kurt Walker, because he is the only Irish boxer in action on the first day. How is he set?
Yeah, well, I suppose Kurt, again, you know, in 2019 he got medals in the European Unions and the European Games. He's got a tough enough opening draw, the Spaniard, who was a bronze medalist in 2016. But, you know, Kurt is one of those guys who will be going and will be quite hopeful of getting a medal, I suppose. It's that unfortunate thing where he's been drawn in the early round and stuff. But look, these guys are well conditioned to go into championships and being drawn early and stuff like that. And, you know, Kurt, that's not something that will deter or will daunt Kurt in any shape or form at all. He'll go there. He'll be quite hopeful. He's out early, 4 a.m. Irish time, around about that on Saturday. He'll be quite hopeful of getting his opening victory and getting into a bit of a groove over the next week or two.
Yeah, and get the Irish off to a winning start would be great as well, because there's nothing better than a little bit of momentum. Emmett Brennan, though, does have a very tough opponent.
Yeah, Emmett Brennan and Aoife O'Rourke both have really, really tough first fight. Emmett Brennan, I suppose, like we spoke about the great story of the Walsh siblings, Michaela and Aidan, but what a story, Emmett Brennan. He was out of boxing, he had quit the sport, and he's come back in. Like, to for Emmett Brennan, reaching the Olympic Games is quite the fairy tale in itself, given his recent history and stuff. But he goes there, I mean, really, you know, as silly as this might sound, to go to the Olympic Games and have nothing to lose. He fights Rusmatov, an Uzbek who's a former silver medalist at the World Championships. But as Emmett showed, he's got guts and he's got heart and he's got fight, which for a boxer, it's quite the tools, you know. But it's a really, really tough draw. And, you know, I suppose we have to be realistic for his ambitions, and realistic in terms of expectations as well of the team, because there are some really, really, really tough hurdles, no more so as well than Aoife O'Rourke, who fights Lee Kuan, the Chinese boxer who was the 2018 world champion at her weight and was a bronze medalist in Rio. But I suppose Lee is in her 30s now, and Aoife probably, again, you know, taking real energy from her performances in Paris. But, you know, got to be realistic with these. It would be a huge upset of odds if either of them were to navigate their first round draws.
And what about Brendan Irvine, the Irish captain? He does have some Olympic Games experience. He is opening his account on Monday.
Yeah, and I suppose interesting just from a team perspective of the eight boxers that we sent to Rio 5 years ago, as it is now. He's the only one who's still involved in the amateur setup. And, you know, again, that's sort of something like we've come through a golden decade or a golden sort of, you know, 10, 15 years. I mean, if we go back to when Andy Lee was an Olympic boxer in 2004, he was the only boxer. He was the only boxer that we sent to those games. So, you know, quite a change and that sort of sea change in the Irish boxing thing and the high performance. But there's been quite a changing of the guard inside the ring and outside the ring. And Brendan, he's quite literally the only one now carrying the flag. And he does that. He starts... He's got a Filipino boxer who's got decent enough pedigree over in Asia, but, you know, Brendan will be quite confident. He's come through injury trouble, and I think he's the one boxer who has really benefited from the year out, because he had a lot of injury trouble in 2019, and he would possibly have been going last summer, maybe just not 100%. So those sort of recent, albeit interrupted and COVID-delayed qualifiers and stuff like that they've had, and the bits of training with the high performance and all of that has probably stood to Brandy over the last few months. Fights a bit of an unknown puncher in the Filipino, but he'll be quite confident of getting his round of 32 off to win and start on Monday.
Yeah, look, they're in a position now where they know now what their pathway is. So as Bernard Dunn said today, look, they have that grasp of the first step. Now it's head down. They're moving very much from the training phase to the narrow focus on performance.
Yeah, and I suppose as well, Marie, like we have to take COVID into the equation. I mean, we've already seen so many stories this week of athletes, of coaches, of journalists who have been sort of forced into quarantine and are testing positive and stuff. And not just for the Irish athletes, but opponents as well. Like, I mean, there's so many variables, you know, on top of the ordinary. You know, maybe someone gets a cut eye or something. Someone maybe has to pull out for for a different reason. But this year is going to be so much different. And even in that arena where a boxer maybe in the third round, maybe they've lost the first, won the second, and they're going in and they take the energy from the crowd, they don't have that to draw on now. There's going to be no favouritism in terms of the crowd sort of backing one boxer over the other. It's a completely sort of, it's certainly an Olympic Games with a difference. But for these boxers now, like they've had that bit of time to prepare. They'll be prepared as best they can. You know, I mean, Irish coaches have changed as well, but Zoranty has been a good constant for them over the years, and knows them like the back of his hand, and will have them well drilled in terms of opponents as well. And like, I just think for the boxers, they got to go and just try and grasp it. And that's from Kelly Harrington as well. I mean, Kelly can't take anything for granted. And we spoke about the tough draws that Emmett Brennan and Nifo O'Rourke has, but for them all the same, they have to attack their first bout as if it's their last, and really to see where that journey takes them.
We played a clip of Katie Taylor winning the gold at the very top of the show, and you know, I made the remark that it'd be great to have a day like that again, but I actually didn't even factor in the fact that there was going to be no crowds there, that we actually won't have that energy again. Do you think that they've adjusted now to this new reality, that they'll be well prepared for such a different environment when they go into the ring?
Yeah, I suppose they've had that bit of experience now over the last year and a half, and they're probably well enough conditioned. And also, I think probably for us maybe watching on, and for supporters, we do make a lot more of that. But for the boxer, really, all that matters is what's inside the ropes, really. And that doesn't matter if they're in a packed arena or not. I mean, how many times have we seen Katie Taylor go to remote outposts and empty arenas to fight in European or indeed even World Championships? But this is the Olympic Games. It's the pinnacle for a lot of those. And what's on the line, if there's no one in that stadium or no one in that arena, or it's still the Olympic Games, and there's Olympic medals and places in the Olympic podium. And the thought of another Irish boxer, be it Kelly Harrington or any of her teammates, over the next couple of weeks turning to face the tricolour and around the vein playing, I mean, that's one of those iconic sporting moments that a very select few bunch of people have experienced over the years, and that's the carrot for them all. If they have an easy draw, if they have a tough draw, or whatever is facing them now as they go into that first fight on Saturday morning, Kurt Walker, that's the dream for them all. And again, it's sort of everything else is noise, or as it will be maybe at these Olympics, silence from the crowd. That's the aim, and that's the dream for them all.
Well, you are so right. Chris McNulty, thank you so much for joining us, and we will check in with you again soon. So as Chris pointed out there, look, it is upon us. Overnight, our first Irish athlete is going to be in action. So rower Sunita Puspure, between 1:30 and 2:30, will be going in the women's single sculls. So there are 6 heats in that. So it's expected that Sunita should go off around 1:40 a.m. It's her third Olympics, and she is definitely somebody that we will be hoping will be a medal contender. Then at 2:30 to 2:50, the men's double sculls, Philip Doyle and Ronan Byrne will be in action. So there's 2 heats in this event, and it's expected that they will go off around 2:40 a.m. against New Zealand and Switzerland, and they're looking to book a place in Monday's semi-final. So by the time we wake up tomorrow, we will know those results, and we will also have the opening ceremony to look forward to between 12 and 3 p.m. Boxers Kelly Harrington and Brendan Irvine will be the Team Ireland flag bearers for that opening ceremony. So it's the very first time actually that 2 have been asked to be flag bearers, men, a man and a woman. So the ceremony is behind closed doors, but the last 3 hours will be broadcast on RTE2 and RTE Player if anyone is looking for that. It will be between 11:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. on RTE2 and RTE Player tomorrow. Now we are going to take a very quick break, but first of all, an update on Bose and Dudelange. It is still 1-0 to Bose, and it's half time.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. We are now going to turn our attention to rugby, because the Lions' first test against South Africa is just a couple of days away. I'm joined on the line by BJ Botha and Shane Byrne. Shane, I'm going to go to you first. We got the team yesterday. After much speculation and consideration, we now know who is going to take on the Springboks. What were your thoughts on the team?
Well, I think it's a very strong team. I think it has Warren Gatland's stamp all over it. He wanted to go for physicality initially, and I think that's exactly what was done. But he also has a bit of creativity that we didn't expect, with Stuart Hogg at full-back, Daly at 13. These are probably choices that we wouldn't have seen, but it just shows you the game that really decided his how he was going to pick was that South African A game. If you were lucky enough to be playing in that game, I think it really gave you a foot up. The physicality was through the roof in that game. Wyn Jones, Courtney Laws, Tom Curry all got selected because of that game.
BJ is also with us. BJ, when you look at that Lions team, do you think it is a team strong enough to beat South Africa in that first test?
Marie, how's it going? Shane, how are you doing, man? Yeah, thanks so much for having me. There's no doubt, yeah. There's no doubt, I think. There's no doubt that that team is strong enough. I suppose, from our perspective, you know, again, we have to also look at the bench, you know, and you see coming off the bench potential players that can start in any, you know, big Lions game. And I suppose that's what talks about their strength there, you know. Again, I think there's a few surprises. I wouldn't say surprises, sorry, but a few, I suppose, kind of selections that you wouldn't have as expected, you know, other players to kind of take their role. But again, this is the first test, and look, everything is really in the results. So it all depends how these players go now. And if they do go well, you know, they'll hopefully, you know, secure their place for the next test.
BJ, a lot has been spoken about both teams' benches, and it is because that they have gone with the conventional 5-3 split between the forwards and backs, which wasn't as expected, because I think especially from South Africa, when you're so used to hearing bomb squad and what they're able to launch from the bench, it's not really what they usually go with.
No, it hasn't, you know, and I think obviously there's been a lot of facts added to this. I think a few players obviously been struggling with COVID, not being well, a couple of late selections, and you know, I don't think the selection process has probably been as easy as previous. You know, obviously the 11 of the starting 15 were in the Rugby World Cup final in 2019. You know, but a couple of different combinations up front, and then obviously at 8 with a big loss of Dwayne Tumina. You know, he leaves a big space there, so that is a position, you know, that I think we will miss Dwayne a lot. And obviously the bench again, players that have played in the World Cup, but as you said, not the bomb squad we've seen with a kind of the 6-2 split, but you know, they definitely are there to kind of make that difference.
Shane, BJ mentioned the combinations there, and Rory O'Connor in the Indo today had a really interesting article, and he'd crunched some numbers and figured out that of the 5 key combinations in the team named by Warren to face South Africa, only the centres have started together on tours. So basically, it's pretty much all new. Is this a worry when you're looking at it, the fact that they won't have that fluidity and cohesion just because they won't have played together?
Yeah, that's the whole thing about the Lions, isn't it? That is the danger, is that the first test team, it's always very, very hard to get cohesion because you want to trial everyone out and trial combinations. And yeah, I think it was very obvious when Daly and Henshaw were picked together. It was obvious that I thought that because Henshaw, you would assume, was going to get picked, and he was trying Daly out, he'd been playing well. But yeah, you've got Price and Bigger. None of these guys have played together. There's so many different combinations. And to get everything right, you know, right at the moment, as opposed to we know the South Africans, they've had, you know, COVID interrupted and everything like that, but it's predominantly a team that knows each other very, very well. And the one thing that they do automatically is physicality, as we saw again from that South African A game. So it'll be a little bit of advantage to me, advantage to them, because it is a big, big task. But everybody, I think, on the Lions selection is there by form, which is great to see. There's very few arguments you could have. Tadhg Burn, I thought, is very, very hard to lose out. But I think that was a combination of how he wanted the impact off the bench, whether he wanted just physicality at the start or later, or having the likes of Tadhg Burn and Watson coming off the bench. You know, these are the things that could be debated. But combinations that haven't played together is always a problem. But as long as they're form players, it shouldn't be too much of a hurdle to get over.
PJ, what do you think? You have a front row that has never scrummaged together as a trio against live opposition. Would that be a concern?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, especially in the front row, you know, I think especially look at the kind of the Springbok front row with Inyi Nkane and, you know, Okuntse, you know, kind of really young in his test career. You know, that was very surprising. And I suppose the reason is because Bongi and Kitsoff has played many years together at the Stormers. You know, these combinations we talk about, and really solidify the teams going forward. And these combinations you would usually select. So a really different selection up there. I do say there's some concern, you know, as we know in the front row, you know, as a prop might, you know, I suppose, advance. Example, the Lucid might just give that motivation, advance the tight head by what the way he scrums, so can the tight head. So, mm-hmm. you know, that plays a big part in those combinations. You know, and I suppose for me, I think the front row of the, for now anyway, the Lions at the upper end, specifically with Tig there, you know, I think he's in a season campaign, he's got the experience. So I think Ox is going to be in for a testing day. I hope he proves me wrong, but, you know, I think that'll tell him the game.
Yeah, I think it's probably a key battle that people are really looking forward to. But look, when you do look at the matchups, there probably are some of them that would cause for concern. And I think one of them seems to be Van der Merwe, and just the fact that he is going to be coming up against Chesley Coben, and he doesn't seem like he's defensively strong enough, Shane.
Yes, it is a big eyebrow raiser. That was like, so many wingers have played absolutely superbly heading into this, like racking up massive amount of points. It is, he Gatland, I think when he picked the selection, you saw that he very much originally picked the team for physicality, and I think he stuck with that. Van der Merwe hasn't really put a foot wrong play wise yes, a couple of defensive errors, as you've seen. He doesn't move very fast, which is a worry against Galway, who is, you know, we all know he could turn in an absolutely tiny, tiny space. But he does have physicality, and that's obviously the way Warren wants the game to be played, and he obviously had his eye on him, and he's done enough to get into the team, because there were so many other guys putting their hands up throughout us, and for him to go back to the bulk was a bit of a surprise, and it's something that South Africa will be looking to exploit.
Yeah, Jack, go on, BJ.
Sorry, yeah, Marie, I was going to say that I think there's no doubt that Lions team is a real attacking team selected, you know, and that it needs to be. I think from a defensive perspective, I don't think they want to go there yet. I think they know what they need to bring to the Springboks, and they need to play attacking rugby, you know. We've seen what happens to teams that defend against a heavy physical Springbok side, you know. They only come off second best. So I think where they are, yeah, they've definitely got that balance. And I think, obviously, yes, best people have spoken about Duan Van der Merwe's, you know, defensive frailties, but there's no doubt what he brings in attack, you know. And the rest just need to follow that. So they need to back themselves. That's the only way you're going to overcome the Springboks, especially in South Africa.
Yeah, and just on that as well, and the fact that the three tests are going to be in Cape Town as well, BJ, look, you're obviously from South Africa, so you know the benefits of that. How much of an advantage is it going to be to the Lions?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, Cape Town hasn't been, you know, one of the best grounds for the Springboks in the past. You know, we like to go up to the half-half play, get Ellis Park, play in Loftus, and even down at Kings Park in Durban hasn't been the best grounds for, I would say, best now, comparing to the Ellis Park and how we've gone in Loftus. So there's no doubt that is not our best, you know, playing field. So the Lions will be very aware of that. You know, there's been quite a lot of rain in Cape Town, but it looks like it might be quite cold and clear for the weekend. So yeah, I think it's going to be great playing conditions. And again, I think you know, the Lions will be, you know, well educated there of how the Springboks have gone in Cape Town, and they'd look for that good start. You know, I think they need a good start if they're going to be, you know, in with a chance.
Yeah, that seems to be key, all right, to try and get that win in the first test. But it's difficult, I think, probably because there are still some uncertainties around some key positions. And as well, Shane, when you see somebody like Sia Khelese coming back as well, and knowing what he's capable, look, albeit we don't know what the effects COVID might have on him, but you'd have to think if he's back in, that he's well recovered and he'll be ready to go.
Yeah, he's been a real talisman, hasn't he, for the Springbok right the way through the World Cup campaign. It's hard to think that they've gone back that far since they really tied some tests together. But his gameplay is superb as well. He leads by example, and he's a huge plus to have in. If he was in any sort of shape whatsoever, they were going to pick him there, you know, just for the cohesion and the team. As I say, I think the Springbok are in decent good shape. I thought from what we've seen from the players who have played so far, they are ready for these tests, and it's a big, big battle for the Lions. I think the three tests being played in Cape Town is a huge advantage to the Lions in the second and third test. So it doesn't take away the challenge of this first test, because it really is, in a Lions series, the first test is so important. Whoever gets that first scalp it really is a massive, massive boost to morale right the way throughout whichever camp it is.
Yeah, and Warren as well has been quite clever in making sure that he's very clear on the fact that just because you're picked for the first test doesn't mean that he isn't keeping an eye on what is coming behind you as well. So there'll be a huge amount of pressure on all of these players to perform so that they can go on to the next test. And PJ, seeing Jack Conan out to the media today was just brilliant, and his mom was on the news last night, and I think he's somebody that everybody will be behind just because he's been through so much with injury over the last while, and to bounce back and to be able to get into position where he's a starter for the Lions in a test game in South Africa is remarkable.
Yeah, I know, just remarkable. You know, who would have thought? I think if someone told you, you know, a couple of months back, we'd be in this position, and I think he had a better chance. People are talking a better chance of kind of winning the lottery. You know, I think it was literally the ascendancy to this position. You know, and fair play to him. You know, he's done everything right. He's continued and he's come out stronger from his rehab. You know, and as you said, it's been a tough road. And you know, remarkable. You know, to see him, and just, you know, great to see him in that eight shirt. And I'm sure he doesn't want to let go of that. You know, I think it's key there again how we see. Possibly, as he's obviously individually, you know, kind of, you know, massive at eight, but that's all lies on the pack and how they can create that dominance up front, you know, which will just make that, you know, I suppose his job that little bit easier. So he's going to be key there off the back of the scrum. You know, South Africa are going to put them under pressure, which will relate to that back side of that scrum. So there's no doubt he'll have a lot of work to do. And, you know, those key aspects between eight and nine with Ali Price and then the ball getting out to that back line, that looks dangerous. You know, you can just have a massive task on board, and I'm sure you'll relish it.
No. Marie, if I could just say, if you don't mind, that's the absolute joy about the Lions, because Conan would have been one of the players who everybody was a little surprised that he got on the plane. Now, deserved with his form in the recent times, but when you get out on the Lions, the slate is wiped clean. And Conan has absolutely grabbed it by the scruff, on and off the park by all accounts. He's been, you know, very, very popular guy, training superbly, and his performances deserve him to get on the first test. And that's, to me, he epitomises the Lions, the opportunity he's taken and getting on that first test side.
Yeah, and that back row in particular, it really was one that nobody could kind of figure out who was going to play. And I think it was maybe one that did give people a bit of a surprise when it was announced. And just BJ as well, I want to have a quick chat with you about Warren Gatland meeting with the referee Nick Berry yesterday, just to look for a little bit of clarity on a few things. And I know that there has been a bit of focus on Luke Cowan-Dickie and his tackle technique. Is this going to be an issue, do you think?
Oh, look, well, I hope it isn't. You know, we want to obviously have a free-flowing game. We want the man in the middle really to do his job and obviously let the game take play, I suppose. But these little aspects of the game are important, you know, from a safety perspective. But hopefully they don't play, you know, a huge part. I know we spoke about a couple of, you know, close hard tackles and, you know, arms around the neck, and we don't want to see that. And we don't want to see anything that's going to be from a safety perspective. But what you want to see, it's always going to happen in these hard physical encounters, you know. Naturally, the guys are going at it full tilt, you know, and at that level, you know, some control is quite difficult. I think as much as they can, they'll kind of obviously keep that, you know, in line. And, yeah, as I said, I think the key there is for that free-flowing game, really to make the spectacle, it deserves to be a physical, you know, battle, you know, of the highest order. And I think if that happens, we will definitely get that.
Well, hopefully anyway. Shane Byrne, give us a prediction.
Well, look, I'm not going to go against the Lions. I think they picked an absolutely superb side. I'm hoping that the rustiness will come against South Africa. I think they do have advantages in many areas, but I think we've picked a good side, so let's go for a win.
Okay, and BJ?
Yeah, I think from both teams' perspective, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, a great battle. I said again about the bench, that's going to be a huge impact. But for me, I think the settled side of the Springboks, the combinations they have, will give them the edge, you know, as the latter part of the game, and they take that grip. And obviously, you know, don't forget about the players like Colby, who's a game changer, I think, and we'll probably see that impact in that game. So I'm going to go with the Box, you know.
Okay, right. Well, differing opinions, that is always good. It is live here on Game On 2FM on Saturday from 4:45. So do tune in. Bernard Jackman will be live in studio with Michael Corcoran and Donal Lenihan on commentary from South Africa. Shane Byrne and BJ Botha, thank you so much for joining us. We are going to take a very quick break and then we're back with football.
Game On 2FM.
So Welcome back to Game On with Marie Crowe. We are turning our attention to football. Bows are playing in Luxembourg in their Europa Conference League second qualifying round against Dudelange. They were 1-0 up when we were last talking to Paul Curry before halftime. Paul, are they still 1-0 up?
They are indeed, Marie, and they're pretty comfortable at the moment. Dudelange have really rarely threatened in behind. They've not really tested James Talbot at all, and Bohemians look comfortable. The one thing that you would like to see is maybe just retaining the ball a bit more. They've maybe gradually started to sit a little deeper, and that can be telling on the legs, particularly in the heat out in Luxembourg. But at this moment in time, they're very, very comfortable.
I saw you tweeting that Dawson Devoy is excellent. What is so good about this youngster that everybody is talking about?
Listen, he's been superb over the last number of weeks, and I guess particularly when you see him playing in Europe and it becomes quite a technical game, that's when Dawson has really started to flourish. He's very creative with the ball at his feet, he's very comfortable with at his feet, and he brings other people into the game. And for me, it's his vision, it's his ability to create chances that has been super over the last number of weeks. And he was brilliant in the Aviva last week, and he was very much at the forefront of them winning that game. And if they were to win 1-0 tonight, the ball for the goal was brilliant. And if they can get him on the ball a bit more in the second half, there's chances there, and Bowes could nearly nick another one.
Right, well, I look forward to seeing that pass for the goal. Now, Adrian Eames also joins us from Talla Stadium, where Dundalk are facing Lavinia Tallinn at 7:45. Adrian.
Good evening, Marie. Yeah, very, very warm here, and as you would expect, a sultry evening in Talla for the meeting of Dundalk and Lavadia Tallinn. We've just got the Dundalk team, and there's one change from the side that overcame Finn Harps with, unfortunately, from a Dundalk perspective, Michael Duffy not available this evening. So Wilfred Zahibo slots into the side. So it's Abibi, I'll give it as it reads, Yurkovskis, Boyle, Natastad, Leahy, Zahibo, Stanton, McElhenney, Patching, Kelly and McMillan. So it's an important tie. Of course, it goes without saying for Dundalk, they would love to take a lead to Tallinn for the second leg. The conditions obviously will be an issue this evening. Two very evenly matched sides, it must be noted. Mind you, Dundalk overcame Lavadia Tallinn over two legs back in 2018, but it's much changed, of course. A lot of water has passed under the bridge. Dundalk were managed by Stephen Kenny at the time, and a lot of the mainstays have gone and departed the Dundalk scene. But still, when you look at the Dundalk lineup this evening, it is a very experienced lineup. What about Lavadia Tallinn? When they've got players who've been capped by the national side. They are going great guns in their league at the moment, Marie. They lead at the table by some 4 points. They've won their last five in a row, and of course, in this competition, they accounted for St. Joseph's off Gibraltar in the last round. But Dundalk really finding a good vein of form of late since Vinnie Perth returned to Oriel Park. He's only in the hot seat, or returned to the hot seat about a month ago, and he's managed to really steady things. They've climbed up the table, taking 10 points from their five league games that he's overseen. Also saw off Newtown of Wales in the Conference League very comprehensively at home, 4-0, before Michael Duffy grabbed the only goal in the away leg. So they're in a pretty good place at the moment, but Vinnie Perth, speaking during the week, reckons this will be tight. He reckons that the tie won't be done and dusted this evening. It'll all depend on the second leg, but he'd love, I'm sure, to take a lead to Estonia next week.
Yeah, he would. Vinny has been very vocal about how he wants Dundalk to start playing the Dundalk way, and surely in a big game like that would be the perfect place to be doing that. And Talla's place that they're quite comfortable in as well, and there's going to be a lot of fans there too.
Yeah, upwards of 1,000. Whether there'll be quite the 1,000, we have to wait and see. I gather there's still some tickets floating around this afternoon, but no doubt about it, Dundalk won't lack for support this evening. As we know, Dundalk fans really get behind their team, so whether it's 800, 900 or the full capacity of 1,000 that's been allocated, they'll get behind their team. Pitch looks absolutely perfect as well, Marie, which is great to say. And obviously it's a change for Dundalk in terms of the AstroTurf pitch or the 3G surface at Oriel Park, and David McMillan talking during the week about that. Said he, you know, he's delighted to get the opportunity to play on grass. And in terms of the conditions, they've obviously had to play games in recent weeks in very hot conditions as well, so they're not too concerned about that. Certainly that was the view of David McMillan speaking to us yesterday.
Well, Adrian, I think after the last few days, we're all acclimatised now at this stage to the nice weather. Okay, Adrian, thanks so much. Just very quickly, Paul, before we go for a break, any updates from you?
No, still 1-0 to Bohemians here, Marie. So, you know, very much in the control seat here. It'd be great if they could hang on to this. And like I mentioned, if they could bring a positive result back to the Aviva next week with 8,000 fans, my God, what an occasion that would be.
Yeah, there really is so much momentum behind them now. And as I mentioned a little bit earlier, those tickets selling out so quickly. I mean, there is a lot of fans there who are behind their team and getting out, supporting them. And in a summer of sunshine, it is just brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. And Keith Long deserves major credit. I mentioned it last week. They have to do quite a chop and change at the end of most seasons because they've lost a number of strong players. But the link they have with St. Kevin's is proving very fruitful. And you can't get away from the players that have come through that system. But the recruitment also has been really good. And they're probably a bit more set up for Europe this season with the players they have to retain the ball than they were last year. And this competition, whether people like it or they hate it, it gives Irish teams opportunities to progress through rounds because we're playing lesser opposition. And if they can get good experience under their belt and they progress these players, well, the club is only going in one direction.
What do you think about the Europa Conference League? I know there was a lot of debate about it before it started going, but once it started, there hasn't really been too many people talking negatively about it.
No, I mean, every year we look at Europe for Irish teams, yes, to progress through rounds, but it's also... it's a major financial boost for a number of our clubs, and the finances are there within this Conference League that if you progress through the rounds and you get to the group stages, well, you're going to be getting something relatively comparable to what you would have gotten in the Europa League. So by placing our teams at that level, this is more, you know, when you're playing the likes of the Estonian League or teams from Luxembourg, that is realistically our level. And when you make it more of a level playing field, well, then we're getting greater opportunities to get more finances into our game. Like you look at Dundalk tonight, they have to go to Tala. The pitch at Dalymount and the stadium probably needs a bit of an uplift as well. So they're two examples of clubs that are playing that need those finances in order to improve the facilities. So anything that gives us an opportunity to raise the standard of our domestic game, I'm all in favour of.
Okay, thank you, Paul. We are going to take a very quick break and we will check in with you before the show ends, and we'll be back next with Jeff Shepherd and US Sports.
Game on 2FM.
Now, on Tuesday night, the Milwaukee Bucks beat the Phoenix Suns to win their first NBA title for 50 years. Jeff Shepherd joins us on the line now to talk us through the dramatic affair. What a win for the Milwaukee Bucks, Shep.
Yeah, Marie, you know, just the city of Milwaukee, the state of Wisconsin, went absolutely bananas in support of this team. Just even before we get to the game, in the area outside the arena, you know, the Bucks, that's like a nickname for a deer. They called it the Deer District. They had, they think, somewhere between 60 and 70,000 people outside around the stadium. These are folks that couldn't even get into the arena. And so the place just went mad. And then Giannis Antetokounmpo, and I know I just butchered that, I've never said it properly, scores 50 points in game 6, and they get their fourth win of the series to claim their first NBA title since the early 70s when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was playing with them. And so just an incredible story. You know, I think one of the biggest, most interesting things, Marie, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, in the NBA, the super teams. You know, you had Kevin Durant and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson out in Los Angeles, and you've got, you know, LeBron and Anthony Davis, or that was in Golden State, and LeBron and Anthony Davis in Los Angeles now, and Harden and Durant in Brooklyn now, and you know, just these super teams. And Giannis has got himself some pretty good players, guys that have been former all-stars, but you know, guys that wouldn't technically call, like, you know, the elite of the elite. And Milwaukee is a small market area in the NBA, and for them to win a championship, it's just good overall for sports in America to not have to have the most dominant player on the most dominant team. Now, he could definitely be considered that, but they are by no means just running away from people and destroying everybody by 50 points. This was really good to see from a competition standpoint in the NBA.
It seems like it was really pure, and I saw Shaquille O'Neal tweet Giannis afterwards and say, "Congratulations, thanks for bringing old school bully basketball back." He scored 50 points, but he just seems like he has cemented his place now as one of the greats.
Yeah, I mean, he can do it all. You know, he can step outside and shoot. He doesn't do it a ton, but he can do it if he needs to. He's just so big and so athletic and just basically so unguardable. That quite honestly, Marie, it almost seemed like, you know, the way he was playing in the series, it's kind of like if he wanted to just go out and score 50 every night, like, who's going to stop him? You know, I mean, what are you going to throw at him that's going to contain him. I mean, he was just phenomenal with his athleticism, and then when he needs to get physical, he can get physical. I think, you know, we've talked so much about LeBron in recent years. You know, he has been in the league for so much longer. He is older than Giannis is. But I think if we haven't passed the torch already to Giannis, that is in motion for the future of the sport, for him to be the best player in the league for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, and he's got a brilliant story as well, coming from Greece, Nigerian parents, just having a really tough upbringing, and which will be quite worrying for a lot of teams. He's got a lot of brothers coming through as well who seem to be quite good.
Yeah, I'm really going to have to start working on my pronunciations, because it sounds like this is going to be a last name that we're going to have to know for a long time.
Yeah, it does sound like there's the makings of a legacy there. Now, speaking of legacy, it brings us nicely on to the Team USA, the women's football team, who didn't get their Olympic Games off to a great start, losing to Sweden in what is a massive shock.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just that they lost, it's how they lost, the 3-0 score, and just the fact that they were, quite honestly, I mean, as you might imagine, they were dominated, especially in the midfield. And, you know, Megan Rapinoe, never one to bite her tongue, came off the field, and in her first interview, you know, I'll clean this up because this is a family radio show, but she basically said, "We got our rear ends kicked." And that's pretty much what happened. I mean, they were fortunate to be down 1-0 at the half and gave up two more goals. They, I think they had two corner kicks the entire game. I mean, they just 5 or 6 shots on goal. They just really were never in it. And it's interesting. I mean, the Swedish team has given America, the American women, fits for the last several, you know, world tournaments, whether it be World Cups or the Olympics. In fact, they knocked them out in Japan, or they knocked them out of the semifinals. They beat them. And so, you know, this has been an interesting, I mean, I would say it's probably the closest thing you'd have to a rivalry that the Americans have right now. You know, it's certainly not over. I mean, there's 12 teams that are there. 8 of them make the next round. The next match is Saturday morning. They're going to play New Zealand. And no disrespect to New Zealand, but New Zealand's first competitive match in like 18 months was Tuesday when they played Australia. I mean, you know, because of the COVID restrictions, I mean, they just have not been able to work out, and they lost 2-0. And so, I mean, the Americans are basically in a must-win situation on Saturday, and hopefully they can go out and get another W.
And just in terms of the Olympic Games over there, we're obviously in the middle of building up to it. We'll have an athlete in the water tonight in the rowing. We're getting very excited about it. What's it like over there in terms of build-up?
So, you know, everybody, I think most people get excited in the States when there's an Olympics going on. The biggest issue we have is just the time difference with, you know, between Tokyo and even New York, and especially Los Angeles. I mean, it's just, you're looking at 12 to 13, 14 hours of a delay there. I mean, the women's match started the other morning, I think at 4:30 Eastern time, which is like, you know, New York and D.C. and Philadelphia. So if you're talking about the rest of the country, you're talking having to wake up at 2:30, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning to watch this match. And, it's just difficult to do. But that doesn't stem the excitement. One of the things that, you know, with the streaming services nowadays, I mean, you can kind of watch the Olympics all day. And you may know the results, but, I mean, look, for instance, the part of South Mississippi just outside of New Orleans where I live, we have 2 track stars competing for the Americans from, you know, just our little area of the country. And so no matter what time that those women are going to be competing, I'm going to wake up and watch them, because, again, they're from where, you know, where I'm living right now. And so, you know, it's that type of stuff I think you're always going to, you know, feel emotional about and get up and watch if you have to. But, you know, that's about the biggest thing is the time delay right now. And once the ceremonies really kick off, that'll really kind of get you into that Olympic spirit too.
That's it, Shep. We'll be on every single bandwagon going. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week. We're going to cross back over to Paul Curry, who is watching Bows for us. Paul.
72 minutes gone here, Marie. Still 1-0 Bohemians. Dude Lange coming into the game. There was a penalty scare there roughly about a minute ago. And it's probably going to be a long 19 minutes now for Bows. But they're most certainly in the tie. It's going to be a close one over the 2-leg. And hopefully they bring that positive result to the Aviva next week.